Evening everyone, welcome to the July Council meeting of Brighton. Just a reminder, welcome to senior staff and members of the public gallery. It's the biggest gallery we've had for a while, so thank you for your attendance. An audio recording of this council meeting, except for any part held in closed session, will be made in accordance with our audio recording council and planning authority meetings policy 7.11. The audio recording will be available on Council's website within 7 business days after the meeting. I'd like to begin by acknowledging the Palawapakana, Tasmanian Aboriginal community, as the traditional and original owners of the skies, land and water of Lutruwita, and forward our respects to their elders both past and present. Brighton Council acknowledges the continued connection the Tasmanian Aboriginal people still have to the skies, land and water of Lutruwita that provides them with the food, medicine and crafts celebrated through ceremony today. Item 2 is attendance. We have noted councillors in attendance. Item 3 is applications for leave of absence. We have one application for leave of absence, which is Councillor De La Torre. Some are prepared to move. Moved by Councillor Owen, second by Councillor Murtagh. I'll put that motion. All those in favour, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Against? Carried. Thank you. Item 4 is confirmation of minutes, and item 4.1, confirmation of minutes of the ordinary council meeting held on the 20th of June. Is there any questions, amendments or comments? If not, is someone prepared to move?
Yep.
Moved by Councillor Iron, second by Councillor Curran. I'll put the motion. All those in favour, please say aye.
Aye.
Against? Carried. Thank you. Item 4.2 is the planning authority. There was no planning authority in the month of July. Item 4.3 is committees of council. There are no committee meetings in July. Item 5 is declaration of interest. Just ask if anyone wishes to declare an interest in anything on the agenda. Councillor Murtagh has declared an interest in 13.1. Councillor McMaster has declared an interest in 13.1 and 13.3. Councillor Owen?
I'd just make mention of the fact, Mayor, that the applicant for the lease on 205 Brighton Road was an ex-boss of mine, so I'm just announcing that is the case. And
done.
Just so that it's on the record.
Done. Thanks, Councillor Rowland. With those being noted, we'll move on to public question time and deputation. And I'd like to ask Mr. Jeff Hull to come forward on behalf of the Brighton Food Hub. Thanks, Jeff.
I'd like to echo those sentiments of the acknowledgement of the country too while we're here. I think that's very important. I just wanted to address you tonight to talk a little bit about the elected members would have received an email with a letter in it from me outlining the work of the Food Hub, and I'm sure you're all aware of that. But I just wanted to emphasise a couple of points in that and also give you a bit of an update on where we are with everything at the moment. The food hub, we've had a demand an increase in our demand of 50% since the start of the year. We're now assisting around about 700 people each fortnight, and about 45% of those people attending the food hub say that they are regularly worried about putting enough food on the table for people attending. That's an important point. They're buying a lot less meat, a lot less fresh fruit and vegetables, and they're buying food on credit. They're also borrowing food on family members and friends. So things are pretty tough out there for a lot of people. There are also mothers and fathers that are skipping meals to make sure their kids have got enough to eat. As far as the food hub itself, there's a certain amount of shame and stigma attached to going to a food relief service. We see it often. It's at times people are embarrassed, they're ashamed why they come along. Our food hub offers a non-judgmental service where we welcome anyone and everyone, regardless of their employment status or their social standing. We're very proud and unique in that regard. A lot of other places will only allow people to access their food relief services. They've got an unemployment card or a pension card or things like that. We're just open. If you need food, affordable food where they appear. We make that quite clear to everybody. It's strange since the start of the year. This time last year we would see people come through but in their old sneakers and their tracky daps and their hoodies. But now we're seeing a different demographic come through. There's a lot of people. I think this is the new part of what we're seeing at the moment. There's a lot of people coming through who've got nice clothes on, nice shoes, could be driving a nice car. So it's that creep of the financial crisis that's down there. A lot of the people that come, 15% are employed. They have jobs, they work, they have an income. 27% are unemployed. 15% are students and 20% are on disability pensions or some sort of support. That just gives a brief overshot of what's happened since the start of the year and up till now. Our primary supplier of our food hampers and other goods is Food Bank, Tasmania. They've recently told us that it's going to have to be, they're forcing an increase in all of their products as well. Where this community is fortunate, we've managed to secure $8,500 funding from the state government. We've also coupled that up with a $2,000 grant we received from Communities for Children and also a $2,000 donation from the Quibbles Association. The committee's made a decision that our prices aren't going to rise. We think we can get through to the end of the year without any price increases. All the other food relief services are putting their prices up. We're going to exhaust that money right down to we've got none of it and put those benefits back into the community. Between now and the end of the year, we'll be looking extensively at a range of income and fundraising options. We've got some really good people in our committee and on our executive particularly, and we've got some good ideas around that sort of stuff, increasing our sustainability model. Our view is always to continue to provide the cheapest possible food to the community. Speaking of that, we're also prone to increase. Last year, our fruit and veg, we used to purchase about $500 worth of fruit and vegetables every fortnight. It's up to $750. But we're committed to that because it's really important for the kids, particularly, to have good fresh fruit and vegetables. And it's one of the things that's been identified as not being purchased by people in supermarkets and things. It's dropped off in the way that the meat purchases have as well. It's just too expensive for people. Some of the stories that we hear are really heartbreaking at times. People having to choose between putting food on the table or whether to keep the electricity on. I don't want to get political here, but this unnecessary price increase for electricity has just made things 10 times worse for people. People who didn't have much to start with, even got less. And it was completely unnecessary, that it doesn't need to happen. There doesn't seem to be a lot of empathy around those decision-making processes. We've had young mothers and their children turn up for food, up, no money and no food. We have the ethos where we never turn anybody away. A lot of the time our volunteers will put up their hand to pay for food for people in this situation, but we won't do that. The food hub will cover the costs and we'll make sure that family's got some food to go home with. And we'll hopefully follow up with them and make sure they're supported going forward. Our volunteers, just quickly mention them, they're fantastic. Some of them are supporting families and family members and other families, their neighbours and whatnot. They'll purchase food hubs out of their own, food pans out of their own pockets to supply their neighbours to make sure they've got enough. A wonderful bunch of people, volunteers, I can't speak highly enough. Sometimes a bit like herding cats, but we get there in the end. I really do think that unless you've had a lived experience of this and walked in the shoes of these people in these situations, you can only guess at the stress and the trauma and the anxiety around that, trying to make those bills paid every week and make sure there's enough food on the table. As a not-for-profit association, Food Hub, from the start, from the outset, we set up a model that was cost neutral so that we could return all money to the community in a way of cheaper food. It's only recently that we've sort of turned our mind to profit making or to look at a more sustainable business model. And now we're in a situation now, we do have the capacity, financial capacity to pay some costs for the hall hire, but that cost has got to come out of our budget somewhere. And that's money that would otherwise be spent in the community, to assist the community. There's talk around $4,000 plus there. We would find that money through fundraising or other means if we have to. A couple of things I wanted to address. I saw on the agenda a couple of reputational risks to be considered by council. One of them was about, you know, the community assuming that we can waive fees for every project that has a positive social impact. I think council needs to look at a weighting system as far as that goes and about what the benefit is to the community. And the food hub is certainly a huge asset to this community. The second part of that was to do with the food hub maybe seen as taking business away from supermarkets. Well, since we started 18 months or so ago, I've never had a complaint, I've never heard a complaint from any supermarket or corner shop or anywhere. So I'm not quite sure where that goes, but and I'm pretty sure that there's not many people with much empathy for these multinational supermarkets that are pocketing huge profits anyway. And besides that, these companies are also large contributors to food banks, so it'd be a bit hypocritical of them investing in food bank and then complaining about it. I can't see that as being a risk to council or anyone. So just in summing up, our committee and our volunteers have very much appreciated the generous support of council over the last 18 months. We're very pleased to be working with council representatives moving forward. There's some really good people here. They've put us at ease over the situation that we're in, and we're very pleased about that. And we just want to ensure that we can continue to offer this vital service to the community and contribute to the safety, the health and well-being of the community and continue that work. So thanks again for your time. Has anybody got any questions on the head?
Councillors?
Yeah, I've got a couple for you, Jeff. First of all, thank you for sharing all that with me, and you'll have to pardon my ignorance. I'd love to come down and see it in action sometime, and I probably should have by now, and apologise for that. Could you just run me through the food that's given out? Is it pre-cooked, or is it just hampers of fresh produce?
No, we don't have a licence for pre-cooked.
Yep, so you don't need a commercial kitchen or anything like that?
No.
Like, so even prepping the food into the hampers, it can be done just in that space?
I look at in the future.
Yep.
Organise a standalone small shop front and a warehouse out the back.
Mm-hmm.
That would be ideal for us because we have all sorts of problems with those tables that are setting up over there. It's a fantastic location.
Yep.
The venue's not good for us. We had one of our volunteers was injured last time. With shoulder injury from the tables, moving the tables around.
Sure.
So that's a risk thing that we have to cope with. So if we had something like a shop front, we can lock the door and walk out. We could also open 3 or 4 days a week.
Yep.
Provide a much better service for the community.
But I'm guessing it's important you're within walking distance for a lot of people as well.
Absolutely. Yeah, that's right. And the bus and things, we had a meeting with General Manager recently. We had a discussion about some survey figures we did recently on how many people walk there, how many catch the bus, how many taxis, how many drive.
Yep.
I haven't got the stats with me, but there's a fair percentage right there, but there's still a lot to catch bus. And the things I see them with their hampers at the bus stop.
Yeah.
So the central point here is the best place.
Yeah, gotcha.
But, the system with the hall is manageable, but it's difficult at times. Mm. Particularly when we clash with other events.
Yep.
We were there, we clashed with an event last Wednesday week ago. Volunteers came down Wednesday, they worked for about 3 hours, they came back at 7:30 that night when we left there at 4:10.
Sure.
And they turned up at 10 o'clock the next morning to open up.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
So there's a lot to ask of the volunteers, and none of us get any younger.
Mm. And is there, and again, just to throw, just trying to get, the thought bank going. If you had a spot, because obviously that limits you if it's got to be within walking distance to where you could have everything, could you have a preparation spot where everything is done and then potentially, a van to take it
to a couple of drop points? Would that system work and open up a few more places that might work?
We've actually looked at, the committee looked at the travelling through Gove, because we want to take this model to other places to roll it out. That would be the success. We don't see that success of that. And we've worked with other New Norfolk, Sam up there who runs the New Norfolk community pantry. She used to work with us as a volunteer. So we've extended that out further, but it's an interesting point that you say there, the van and movement.
Just it opens up a lot more spaces you might be able to have as a prep base if it doesn't have to be in that one spot, so that might be worth it. I'd love to have a brainstorm with you at some point and see if we can help with that.
We've looked at purchase of vans and different things, but there's all sorts of things that come to that as well.
Yeah.
The cost of insurance, who's going to drive, where it's going to be parked, all those sort of
absolutely.
Things.
Absolutely.
So, you know, as an organisation that's only been around for 18 months, we've done, you know, we're pretty proud of what we've done. And, this year we're really kicking goals, we're thinking. And that need out there, you know, we often talk amongst ourselves, and we, you know, I say to the volunteers, it's not about us. We don't say, what's in it for us? We say, what's in it for them? Well, how can we help in the community? We're looking at all different models and different, we've changed our operating models recently. We're looking at constantly reviewing our management plans. And we've got some good ideas and hopefully they'll come to fruition.
Well, congrats to your volunteers and to you for the passion you put into it as well. It's fantastic.
Absolutely.
Great. Councillors, anything further?
Thanks, everyone.
Thank you very much for that, and thank you very much to the people who have attended with you. Councillors, with your approval, what I'd like to do is move item 13.6 to just before the Planning Authority, and also I'd like to move 13.3 in front of 13.2 to allow Councillor Master just to go out for those two items and then return for further debate. Is there any issue or concern with that? Happy with that?
Happy.
Thank you. Moving on. Item 7 is reports from Council, and item 7.1 is the Mayor's communications for the month of June-July. They're listed there on page 6 of the agenda. Is there any questions or any information that you wish me to put forward on any of those meetings?
Yes.
Yep.
Can you please elaborate on the meeting with AFL TAS CEO Damien Gill?
Yep, no worries at all. David and I went to meet Damien in regards to the high performance centre that is being touted in southern Tasmania at the moment. There's obviously a budget of about $60 million available for that high performance centre. All we did was go and meet with Damien, put forward that we would like to be or considered or at least have a conversation in regards to that and bringing that particular centre to our community.
The meeting well received?
Yes, it was. The only downfall is that there seems to be an understanding from AFL, not from Damien himself, from the AFL hierarchy, that they would prefer to have the High Performance Centre in Hobart itself. So in other words, either at the TCA or at Canelian Bay or somewhere similar. As you'd be well aware, there is a lot of angst about the proposal in the first place in regards to the stadium, and I would imagine that there'll be a lot of angst around placing the High Performance Centre either at Canelian Bay or on the Domain itself. So one easy way of waylaying that is to come to a place like Brighton that's only 25 minutes out of Hobart. There are similar setups in Brisbane. Brisbane is 25 minutes from Brisbane Township, or the centre of Brisbane. Is where the Brisbane Football Club have their high performance centre. Hawthorne is 25 kilometres east, their new one. They're spending $100 million on a place called Dingley. So they're 25 kilometres out of Melbourne centre. You've obviously got one at Moorabbin. Hawthorne's currently at Waverley. So all we did was just have a meeting with Damien and say that. We'll progress this a little bit further. David will advise some details after the meeting and probably have a workshop in a week or two just to show everyone the details of a possible site and location and bring it in to community. I mean, the idea behind it is to make our municipality a destination rather than that's the idea behind it. And $60 million worth of community assets isn't something to be sneezed at. Any other questions?
Just one, Mayor, that's actually I'm not too sure. Maybe. There's just a little typo there against the Brighton Cricket Club. That's June, not July.
It would be.
The photo of you and pro stadium people on certain politicians'
yes.
page interested me, and I just wondered whether you were for or against.
I am certainly for the stadium, for the AFL team, and for the stadium. I wasn't too sold on the AFL team to start with, Phil, because I'm a Hawthorn man, and I'm pretty happy. But to be honest, I've changed my mind. And I'll certainly be one of the members of the Tasmanian Football Club, whatever it be called, when it opens up. I also think that Tasmania, and this is my opinion, so I also think that Tasmania over the years hasn't had too many game changers. The Hydroelectric Commission under Eric Breese was a game changer. We've had some industries. We've had the Federal Group and the Royal Rest Point Casino. We've had Mona of recent years being a real game changer and bringing something different to Tasmania and making us a destination. My opinion is that a stadium for football and many, many other events will make Hobart that destination. It will be a game changer economically for Hobart. That's just my opinion, and I know there's plenty of others that have different opinions to that. But
wrong place to put it.
But that's my opinion, and I'm 100% behind it.
Thank you.
Thank you. If there's nothing further, can I have someone move that report be received? Moved by Councillor Owen, second by Councillor Whelan. I'll put that motion. All those in favour, please say aye.
Aye.
Against? Harry, thank you. Item 7.2 is reports from council representatives. Anyone have anything to report? There's nothing to report on that. We'll move on. Sorry, Councillor Ryan.
Yeah, I just had a couple of little things that I went to. On the 21st, representing the Smith family at Brighton Primary. Smith family's fantastic, the work that they're doing, engaging and seeing how engaged the kids were and how many people came along, and it was the best way I'd describe it is probably around trying to excite people about careers, I guess, and how what they're doing now actually does link in to having a career. So I enjoyed that thoroughly, except for a small animal escape, and I had to leave half an hour early. That was the only issue, but yes, we did find it, so that was all good. And the second one was the meeting for the Greater Hobart Homeless Alliance on the 22nd, and I really enjoyed being there, and have arranged to catch up with Barb to fill her in on what was said. But again, there was a lot of stuff there that is really, really important to note, and I think particularly around our community, a few follow-up questions that they want answered that I'll hassle people about shortly. But yeah, certainly seeing the figures of people sleeping rough going up, and you know, with some of this horrifically cold weather, at what point does there need to be somewhat emergency shelters and those sort of things, and how we might be able to step in for our local community as well. So I think that might be something certainly worth putting heads together on at some stage. But it was a really good bunch of people and a real pleasure to be there.
Excellent. Thank you, Greg. Can I have someone move that Greg's report be received?
Yep.
Moved by Councillor Murtagh, second by Councillor Curran. I'll put that motion. All those in favour, please say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Against? Harry, thank you. Item 8 is miscellaneous correspondence, and there was a letter from the Honourable Christine McBain, which has been included in your agenda. And I'd ask that someone move that that information be received. Moved by Councillor Curran, second by Councillor Irons. I'll put that motion. All those in favour, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Against? Carried. Thank you. Item 9 is notification of workshops. There were no workshops in the month of June. Item 10 is notice of on motion. There aren't any. Item 11 is consideration of supplementary items. There are no supplementary items. As indicated earlier, if I can be indulged, I'll move on to item 13.6, which is the Food Hub waiving of Civic Centre hire fees. Gillian, do you want to speak for that? Thank you.
So the Food Hub has operated out of the Civic Centre since March 2022, and we've currently waived approximately $15,000 in hire and service fees. The services has grown from 120 to 177 people since February this year, so obviously there is a real need for this within our municipality. And I think the most important thing that it, although Jeff said differently, I think it actually gives people dignity that they are still paying for their food. So, yeah, they're accessing a Food Hub sort of situation, but they can still pay towards it. The reputational risk is that council will waive fees for every positive social program, and I think that's still really important to consider, and about the close proximity to Coles and Woolworths. So it just might be seen as a discount grocery store. I'm just playing devil's advocate, really. That's why I mentioned that in the report. The Food Hub is working towards being financially sustainable, and they're sourcing cheaper products and have been successful in obtaining grants for food. So I really like that they're actually looking at that sort of model to move forward. They've been trying to find suitable premises within the same location with no success. I know Ange and Kylie have been sort of hunting around just where everyone's racking their brains in order to try and find an alternative premise for them, which will help their volunteers in set up, and it can just be put there and sort of set up like a shop front. So we've recently had a meeting with the Food Hub committee members, and they advise that they're able to pay something towards the fortnightly hire rates. However, it does take funds away from what they can put into the hampers and wholesale food items. So it was with that we've recommended a 70% reduction in hire fees for the Food Hub day, which is the equivalent of $177.60, and council will in return waive and the amount of the hire fees and service fees at a cost of $426 each fortnight. And we'll also continue to work with the Food Hub in finding them alternative premises in hopefully the same location. So, yeah, totally up to council.
I'd like to move an alternative recommendation of an add-on.
Can I just ask if there's any questions first of Gillian? And then happy to take that as the first off the mark. Any more questions? No? Councillor Murtagh, you have the floor.
Thank you. The alternative recommendation of an add-on was we'd keep A and B. Add C, council write a letter of support on behalf of the Brighton Community Food Hub to all local businesses and politicians advocating for donations to assist in covering higher fee costs. And D, councillors and staff forgo our monthly meeting dinners, snacks and alcohol beverages and redirect the funds towards the $177.60 hire fee.
I'll second that.
Thank you. Debate open. Councillor Murtagh, you have the floor.
Given Lloyd's Bank can feed 15 people a meal per night for $25, that $177 could possibly feed 105 people a meal per night. Now, we have a really good feed every month after we have our council meeting. Can we go without one meal a month, all of us, to feed, possibly give a meal to 105 people for one night? So, and given the food bank, how they're still going through negotiations with rent and monies that are held within the in the bank with the community food hub. That's there for emergencies. If they ever lose any of the food they receive now, any of those donations, they know that that's security, that's emergency, and they will go out there to make sure that our people do not miss out. And we're living in hard times. A lot of these people are really, really struggling, and they do need this support.
Anyone else?
I'll just clarify that. I understand that any savings around arrangements following the meeting here would go to the food hub, not to Louis Van.
Louis Van is using that as an example.
But the saving actually goes to the food hub to offset the hire.
Thank you.
Councillors, I don't have an issue with what Councillor Murtagh has said, but simply I'm prepared to move either an amendment to that particular motion, and I will leave the chair in a moment if I need to. But I think A and B, I'm happy with C, but A should just simply council waive the hire and service fees for the use of the Civic Centre main hall and theatreette every second Wednesday and Thursday, full stop.
Mm. Yep.
Councillor Curran, are you happy to take the chair?
Yeah, well, I'm happy to second that if you.
Councillor Curran has the chair. I've just moved an amendment to that original motion. The procedure is that we debate that amendment unless the mover and seconder are happy to accept that as the original motion.
Can I just clarify what your alternate motion was?
It's simply to remove the charge for the hire.
So no cost.
No charge whatsoever.
Yeah.
Yep.
I'm happy with that.
To add in that we write to politicians on behalf of the food hub and ask for donations. It's up to you, but I'm happy to not have a meal in the food hub, but in the room after. But that's you know, I'm
another
sort of
discussion.
Indicating that's probably not
another
needed.
Discussion. Yeah, fair enough.
Yeah.
Yep.
With that in mind, I don't need to leave the chair. We have an alternate motion, which is that, and I'll read it if I may. Council waive hire and service fees for the use of the Civic Centre, Main Hall and Theatreette every second Wednesday and Thursday for the 2023-24 financial year, full stop. Council continues to work with the Brighton Community Food Hub in sourcing alternative premises for both long and short term. Councillor Murtagh, your third one was
council right
that council lobby state and local federal politicians and government organisations to ask for funding for the food hub to assist in what to the services they deliver. Is that? And you want D?
And businesses.
In our area.
And businesses.
Yep. And you need D in there?
No.
Councillors, are we clear in regards to what the motion is?
Can I just clarify, Mayor, the alternate functions that may be necessary for that Wednesday? What's the arrangement with that?
My understanding is that. For example, we have Louis Van coming in for Dining with Friends on the first Wednesday of every month. If that is concurrent with the food hub, it just means that the setup is after the conclusion of the Dining with Friends. I think I would imagine, Jeff, and you can just sort of nod if you can, that if there is any other bookings for the Civic Centre around those dates and times, that it would be negotiated between the food hub and council to set either an alternate date or cater for both.
Yep.
Councillors, are we clear? observation is.
Yeah. Good.
And that's been moved by Councillor Murtagh and seconded by Councillor Owen. Is there any further debate?
Can I just make a suggestion?
Yeah.
Probably sounds a bit silly, but having the council write to politicians and businesses is one thing, but I think it would be better if it came from the food hub people themselves with support from council, not us writing, but
giving
our support for that letter.
Joint letter.
I'm receiving a nod from the back of the room.
Originally, I did state council write a letter of support on behalf. Mm.
Okay.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. Sorry.
Tennille, can you give that to Janine at some point? It doesn't need to be now, but are we, Councillor Ives?
Yeah. Look, is this the time to speak about what you feel about it? Is that now? Sorry? Getting used to this stuff. Oh, I absolutely can't shut down. I just want to say, just to sort of address some of the things that Gillian mentioned as well, which I think are really valid. We do need to be aware of local businesses, no matter how big or small they are, but as was sort of mentioned, I think they would be very hard not to support something like this as well. And I think, yeah, when it comes down to that expectation that you know, as a council we do waive the fees for other things, I think that is a really genuine risk. But what's great in this fact is it's food, and you can't argue that food is the basis of life for everybody. So I think that's very easily backed up. And I personally think it's a fantastic thing, and certainly what I would have suggested as well is to see if we could waive the fees. And I still, Tennille, I think, really respect Councillor Murtagh, what you had to say in regards to the meals, and there might be something I think we should discuss further, even if it's the case of all the councillors, you know, paying for a meal every once in a while to donate or something like that. I do think personally that the meals are quite important. It's a time for us to unwind and have a chat and say good day and all that sort of thing. So I think there's value in that as well. But I just think it shows a really important thought process around thinking about those around us as well. So, but yeah, full support from this end, and I think it sounds like it's not the ideal venue anyway, longer term. And, I certainly think us all collectively seeing if we can come up with any ideas about how we could make it easier for the food hub would be very worthwhile as well.
I totally agree with what Councillor Owens has said. And also, I think with the two letters going from the food hub and the council, it probably gives them a long-term aspect where we can actually find someone and actually a bit of finance as well from other avenues to help them out and also build yourself up a bit better, so all them things that you're looking in the future might come to fore a lot quicker. So if we can get these other local governments and state government and federal government and other organisations on board, I think their future's going to look bright. Otherwise, if we're just relying on themselves and us, it's going to be very hard in the future to keep going, find somewhere else where they can call home. And that's what they really need, somewhere they call home, and it's a substantial financial funding in the future.
Thanks, Councillor Gere. Anything further? Councillor Murtagh, you wish to close?
Wish to close.
Done. Thank you. I'll put the motion. All those in favour, please say aye.
Aye. Aye. Aye.
Against? Harry. Thank you. That concludes the debate. We'll move back to the normal agenda now. Item 12 is Council acting as a planning authority. Under the provisions of the Land Use Planning and Approvals Act 1993, in accordance with Regulation 25 of the Local Government Meeting Procedure Regulations 2015, the Council will act as a planning authority in respect of those matters appearing under item 12 on this agenda, inclusive any supplementary items. Just noting that there is six members of the planning authority present here this evening. Is that right? Seven. Six. Thank you. Item 12.1 is a planning scheme amendment for the South Brighton Development Precinct. Joe, can I hand over to you?
We've obviously already considered this. Unfortunately, we missed one of the representations due to an administrative error, and the Planning Commission have written to us and asked us to consider this again as a through the Planning Authority, which is very reasonable of them. So basically the representation, the crux of the rep is that the specific area plan is not necessary and it should be a straight rezoning, just a general residential. But the I'll call it a SAP, is not equitable, and that the infrastructure delivery is going to be difficult. I've obviously written some responses to the representation points there, but I mean, I think that the SAP is really important. It serves a function to actually create a well-designed community with quality roads, trails and open space networks. Without that specific area plan there and we just rezoned it to general residential, we would have, I imagine, a situation quite similar to what we're seeing around the Burrows Ave area, where we have sites with lots of units, people trying to avoid providing infrastructure, avoiding public open space contributions and things like that. And we wouldn't have that sort of connected road network, trail networks, and we are going to have to try and find somewhere for open space in that area. So I think that the SAP actually provides certainty, or some, at least an amount of certainty of what the vision is for that area and how it might be laid out. It's probably worth noting that the original Dillon Street landowners group that came together to do this also envisaged a SAP for the area to make it a coordinated development area. In saying that, the SAP has some flexibility in changing the design from what the master plan is. So there is still opportunity to sort of move roads a little bit and open space and things like that. In regards to fair and equitable, I guess we've done the best we can to make this fair and equitable as we can. It's a really complex area. It's probably also worth noting that each lot already has its own constraints that makes it not so fair and equitable. Some have houses in odd locations and other outbuildings. Some have floodways and things like that. So you're not always going to get the same amount of houses on each lot. And in regards to infrastructure delivery, again, like, you're just going to develop one lot without a SAP, you're still going to have to somehow provide infrastructure for that. So the complexities around infrastructure delivery are going to remain. So I'd argue pretty strongly that the SAP is necessary. That's the recommendation, is to not change anything. Part of the recommendation is that we did receive an updated natural values report. They actually sent off a sample of lichen about 8 months ago, which I'd forgotten about, and that the herbarium has only just found out that that is a threatened species and it's located in one area, so we do need to provide that to the Planning Commission, and we've changed the priority veg area overlay to include that one area so that it's recorded. So the recommendation is...
Councillors, I just have one question, David, and it just relates to the SAP. And I suppose it's more just my comment, but just for you to either agree or disagree with what it is. It seems to me like when you're dealing with a brownfield development such as what we have here, with all those constraints in regard to existing buildings and existing road networks, that it's more or less future urban areas, particularly the one up at Boyer Road, had to essentially have a setup of how they would subdivide that particular land if it was ever rezoned to a residential zoning. A SAP is essentially doing that.
Yeah.
Is that a reasonable comment?
Yeah, so the SAP sort of provides that certainty in some regards. So the Tivoli Green area has a SAP, for example, so that's a greenfield area, so it gives council but that's going to be how it's developed. And that it's sort of meeting all those sort of good planning principles. So when they come to actually doing subdivision, it's a lot easier for us to just go, yep, we've already thought about it. It's a little bit more difficult, obviously, because in field development, but it uses that thought.
Yeah. Oh, thank you. Councillors, any questions?
Yeah, the only question I got, I agree with what you're doing, the SAP compared to the residential, but it says here that, you know, it's we encourage a bit more dense, we could do them a lot more densely, which I'm really a bit opposed to, because we've got to be very careful. I don't want to become like another place where it becomes together where you've got too much high density in it.
Mm-hmm.
But the concept of the whole lot is very good, but that's the only worry I've got. If we change the to get the sap the way we're going at the moment, it's fine. But if we change it to a lot of high density buildings in the wrong areas and put them in the wrong place, it's going to upset the whole aspect of that area, because people like us have to live there all the time. Well, you're outside, so the staff are outside that area, so and others. So that's what I'm coming at. But the concept is brilliant. I think it's very good. There's going to be winners and losers, I know, with the whole thing, but I think that's the way we have to look at it. So I'm going to bear it if that's the case, with the losers, and all the winners will be patting on the back. So
through you, Mayor, for me, it would appear that there's some flora considerations in relation to the vegetation overlay. Yep.
There's what, sorry?
Some flora or consideration of the flora.
Yep, yep.
Little or no consideration for fauna.
Oh, there was a full assessment done of flora and fauna.
Yeah, but there's the fauna. Was there any... No, nothing special. Not like Compton Road or anything like that.
No,
there's only bandicoots, kangaroos and rabbits.
just to clarify, thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.
That enables me to support.
I've got to rethink what I was talking about after that. David... if people come in to subdivide later on and their applications vary from the SAP, are we going to be in a situation where we're heading off to get legal advice on every application that comes in, sort of thing?
I don't believe we get legal advice. I think we've got discretion to just internally to sort of...
If it's substantially in accordance with...
I guess the performance criteria is written for it to be substantially in accordance. So as long as the roads line up and we still get the connectivity and the things that we're trying to achieve under that purpose of the SAP, then I think there's some discretion to tweak the layout a little bit.
This originated sort of prior to me, this SAP, but... do you think it could have been dealt with better if we had a local area plan for Brighton and similarly for Old Beach with the issues we're sort of dealing with at Compton and other areas down there?
Local area plan, I guess, is probably at a higher level than a SAP. So I wouldn't be surprised if it even recommended that you create a SAP for that area because of these issues. So
do you think it would have given the SAP more guidance initially, though, being at the high level?
Potentially, but I guess what we've tried to do is just achieve like good planning principles and kind of looked at the subdivision guidelines in the general res zone just to try and achieve that across this area.
I feel like this one sort of started at South Brighton, then incorporated 69 Brighton at some stage of school. Yep. Sort of got involved in that area as well. We've got the service centre. It's sort of just got a little bit out of control. I just think that with that local area plan, maybe we would have had some sort of better guidance. And I think that goes beyond just that area and includes maybe the school farm and the town centre. And then you go to sort of, and I'm sure Councillor Geer would agree, the Pontville Recreational Centre. Like they're all these things are now sort of being drawn upon. And we seem to be changing things pretty radically without a local area plan.
Yeah. I mean, there is a local area plan from Brighton that is pretty old, but it does sort of identify this area as being developed.
Just one other thing on what Councillor Geer sort of raised. Sort of have 375 square metre density for units with potentially a performance criteria. Reduce that. We can have some units in there. Well, we only have to look at Maxwell Place, 288 square metre lot density. Things that character of living certainly changes completely from what is there at the moment. It does concern me.
So, like, the SAP itself is there to sort of create that framework so that we have freehold title. Some of those are going to be big enough to put some units on, but we're trying to avoid those sort of mega unit sites by doing this as well. So.
So the density, the square meterage of each individual block within the SAP is limited to under sort of 700 across the majority of it?
Yeah, so the density there is, so I guess it's the layout of the SAP that it provides, so the density of the lots are going to be roughly what is shown on the plan.
Yep.
So they do vary across it. There's opportunity to provide some more density, but you kind of block for that sort of 400 square metres.
So, so there's no reason, like someone could have four or five blocks on their, develop four or five blocks on their existing block and those blocks be unit development?
Potentially could. So arguably that would be going against the SAP. So the SAP would require them to subdivide it. I guess if they came in and wanted to consolidate all those lots, then that would probably have to be considered separately.
Councillors, we have a recommendation, as David indicated, to send it back to the Commission with no further amendment apart from the additional land in regard to Laura. Is someone prepared to move as per the recommendation or an alternative, noting that an alternative needs a full statement of reasons as determined by the Council? Councillor Ryans has moved that recommendation, seconded by Councillor Geard. Is there any discussion or debate? If not, I'll put the motion. All those in favour, please say aye.
Aye.
Against? Councillor Whelan is against. Thank you. Item is carried. Thank you. Item 12.2 is development application. 2022/134, multiple dwelling 25 and associated infrastructure. At 5 to 13 Maxwell Drive, 15 Maxwell Drive and 17 Maxwell Drive in Bridgewater.
Yes, it is.
Hand over to John.
Thank you. This is a pretty comprehensive report. It's taken a while to pull together, so I'll just go through some dot points, I think. If you've got more questions, let me know. So the applications for multiple dwellings across three titles. So there's a mix of 2, 3 and 4 bedroom units. Most of them are two stories with some three-story units down by the walkway on the riverside. The proposals provided the required number of car parking spaces and can be serviced by water and infrastructure. As you'll see from the proposal, the council walkway has been constructed across the southwestern corner of the site. There has been discussion and agreement with the applicant for that portion of land to be transferred to council as part of this development to allow us to retain the walking track and make minimal changes where necessary due to the topography and proximity to the river and things like that. So they've worked with us to provide that, although that's a separate thing to the planning assessment tonight. Proposal is discretionary in relation to a few standards there that are listed on the front of the report. The main ones that probably require consideration tonight are in relation to density, the building envelope, and then impact on the private open space and sunlight. Parking and access standards have been addressed and are considered to meet the performance criteria, so I won't go into those too much unless you have some questions. You'll see from the report the density issue is probably a big one. The density requirements are 325 square metres per unit in the acceptable solution. This is providing about 280. But probably since the last time we've had an application for a unit development of this density and asking us to look at a reduced site coverage, there's been a tribunal decision that sets aside any requirement to look at a quantitative amount. So, yeah, we're not looking at, we're not going to justify, oh, well, it's only 20 square metres less than what it should be. You need to look at the compatibility of the surrounding area. So the report goes into that. It's taken a lot of work, taking a lot of time to sort of get our head around this one, but overall we think that it can satisfy the compatibility standards just because of the nature of the land, the design of the project. So the designers have worked hard to make the site work with what's around it. If you look at the proposal from the street frontage, the two units at the street will more or less buffer the units behind it. The higher and more dense units are located down towards the river, so they won't be seen from the street. There is a visual impact which will be addressed under the building envelope part of the assessment in relation to the impact it might have on the walking track. But generally, we've decided that it can satisfy the compatibility of the area, given that around the foreshore there are a number of multiple dwelling developments that utilise the open space and take advantage of that as well. In relation to the building envelope, you'll see there that I've addressed that. The main concern was the visual amenity from the building height. So the proposal is approximately, the three units in the front there, approximately 2 metres above the maximum height of the allowed for in the acceptable solution. I spent quite a bit of time negotiating with the applicant last week, and he did agree to change the roof form of those three units, but as I said in the report, I couldn't quantify that as a condition, so I've included a condition if the application's approved to for those units to meet the 8.5 metre high measurement provided by the acceptable solution. Third discretion relates to private open space, but once again the designer has worked well. They've provided separate areas to be used, so there's decks north and south facing, as well as green spaces that can be used by the residents, and they have access to the public open space of the foreshore reserve. And once again, the sunlight discretion can be addressed in that manner because of the ability to get access to habitable rooms and also the decks on those units. And then we're looking at the remaining discretions relate to motorcycle parking and number of accesses, which is the existing roadway plus the two driveways for units 1 and 2. And the natural assets code, which provide, if they provide a soil and water management plan, we think can adequately address the performance criteria in that regard. So we have recommended the application for approval.
Councillors.
First quick question is it a proposal for 25, 27 or 24?
Okay. So, yeah, so it was 27 and when it was advertised, we've advertised it at 27 without realising that they hadn't updated the supporting report, which says still says 27. So the plans had come in and been updated to only 25. And because it was a lesser amount and a lesser discretion, so to speak, we didn't re-advertise it as that. And then one part of my presentation I didn't cover was that as part of the negotiations last week, they agreed to remove Unit 20 and reduce the height of Unit 19.
Yeah, that's in the report.
Yes, in the report. So that's where you get down to 24.
Just to follow on from Phil's, there's a recommendation to approve 24 multiple dwellings, is there? Or?
Yes.
Yeah, so the recommendation is correct. I just didn't cover how we got there.
I think you did.
Yeah, look, I've got just probably a silly question, and I meant to ask you earlier. Can you just go back to page 82 for a minute, please? Your diagram you just had on there. But it is probably a really silly question, but...
22.
The diagram you just had up there.
Walkway.
Can you tell me what...
The brown ones?
Going
right, I mean, it looks to me like it's a walkway down to the
walkway.
Yeah,
but
actually.
It also seems to impact on this unit. If you look at that,
There's
another
diagram
which.
That's a chicane.
I wonder what is it? I think, so there is an access to that unit on the end through that side, so, and connecting to that walkway.
Is that a good idea? Just it stood out to me and thought, if I lived in that unit, I would hate that.
I might be able to jump in just quickly there, Joe. It might seem like a strange addition, given that access across the foreshore is, you know, fairly readily available as you work your way along. But these are important considerations as the foreshore fills out and access through the roadside becomes an issue. It's these kind of linkways that are going to allow people to connect through to our walking trails and the foreshore reserve. So it is an important addition, even though it might not seem.
Okay.
Just the other little question. I've forgotten where I was at. It was basically in relation to the rubbish was one thing, and I'm not too sure how they're going to get a truck in to do
it units has been
5 and 6. Yeah, I know. It's been pretty well covered. And the other thing, are they all private? Are they for private sale? Or
I would believe so. There hasn't been any submission about it being for...
The only reason I asked that is because of the body corporate responsibility for the sewer. And the pump and the overflow, that whole system. I thought, you know, if you've got a pretty slack body corporate, you're going to could possibly have potential issues around that sewer pump station that they're having to install.
Yeah, that would need to be included in any body corporate rules and things like that. But that they don't generally come to council for stuff. So when we get a strata plan submitted, it's not very often that we would actually see the actual body corporate rules that are being submitted to the Land Titles Office.
Just generally, I thought it was quite exciting, the whole thing in fact. But
yeah, they've had to do a lot of work to get the sewer in through there, and I think they've worked with 1 and 3 Maxwell Drive as well to...
I mean, obviously, Councillor Whelan has highlighted the fact that in another strata title development in Brighton that some of the infrastructure that should be on common ground isn't. Does that create a problem in regards to what Councillor Rowan has indicated?
In relation to the sewer pump station? Well, I don't believe so in this instance. The internals are going to be approved through the plumbing permit process and in accordance with Tas Water standards.
Mm. Yeah.
Just a question. It seems to me here we've got multiple dwellings must have a side area. Now, why we have that says must, which means you should accept that side area. But then you have the performance criteria, which is absolutely ridiculous as far as I can see. If you're going to drop it down, as far as I can see, you should drop it down to 288. You can come below that, that's period, without all this other rigmarole of the subdivider going back and finding out what he can do and hitting it in below that same figure. So that's something I've always been against. If you put a thing like that, you should stick to it, not trying to meet the criteria with all these other little things around the aspect of it. If you're going to drop it down, seal it at that, and that's my opinion. That's where I'm going to be sticking from now on. If it says that, I'm not going to interest in the full criteria. That's it.
I think as our role as a planning authority, Councillor Gibb, we have to take into account.
I know the way it is. It should be fixed. Yeah, it should be.
don't probably disagree, but in the current format that we have in front of us, we have to stand as judge and jury on performance criteria as well.
But it seems to me to be in the favour of the applicant than what's anyone else. So.
There's a lot of legal quotes in there. They were, you know, references to legal things. And I think that's what this report's based on, is what's there. Yeah,
well, how far do we go down, though? That's what I'm worried about.
Councillor Whelan?
That's law. Question. So there's been some justification because of the lack of private open space by the fact that the foreshore is nearby, the reserve. That's certainly not a performance criteria. Is it within the planning scheme? Like, that it's adjoining recreational space, I wouldn't have thought. Certainly I don't think if someone subdivides in the area that we would take into account that there's a neighbouring park and have let them reduce their contribution for public open space. So in the same instance, I find it difficult to use a reserve as a justification for someone's development.
I think what I was saying there is that every unit has been provided with some private open space and in various ways, but it also gives you the scope that in a higher density development, you know, that is offset by the fact that you have access to other amenity as well. So I suppose if you look at some of the other multiple dwelling developments we've done around Bridgewater and surrounding areas, this has been designed probably quite well, even though it doesn't meet the density standards, and some of those other developments do, but they've ticked the boxes for density, but it doesn't necessarily mean that, or open space doesn't necessarily mean that they're a great development either. So I suppose it's looking at it in a holistic manner to a certain degree as well, and what's been provided.
Another question. So reducing the unit density, do you think that has exacerbated any of the other discretions? So the setbacks, the height discretions, the site coverage, the private open space, the sunlight overshading, the rest. Do you think that density increase has made those things worse?
It probably has had an impact. I suppose like the units at the back of 1 and 3 Maxwell, you know, if the road wasn't going through there, they may have been able to set them further back down the hill. The units down on the waterfront, not necessarily. I think that's just topography and trying to make it work. It's sort of fairly flat up the top and then it drops quite significantly down towards the boundary.
Councillors, anything further? If not, we have a recommendation for approval on page 39 of our agenda, subject to conditions. In your hands, or you have an option on alternative motion, change permit conditions. In your hands.
I'll move in line with the recommendation.
Moved by Councillor Owen. Is there a seconder for that? A second by Councillor Irons. I now open for debate. Councillor Owen?
All I'd say, Mayor, is that it's a stunning location, really, and it would enhance, I would believe, the area. Certainly got doubts about the density, but it's been justified in the report that be acceptable, and therefore I am happy to move the motion.
Thank you, Councillor Owen. Is there anything further?
I'll probably just back up what Phil's saying. I do find the density thing very hard. It's cropped up numerous times tonight, and the fact that it is such a beautiful site almost makes me nervous in a way as well, and probably why I was a bit second, a bit hesitant to second it, but it sounds like in the discussion that's what will be filled in at some point, and so someone gets that ball rolling and it's done really well and access isn't lost and that sort of thing. It would be stunning. I mean, you imagine on that sort of riverfront anywhere else in the world what that would go for. So look, I've still got some concerns, I guess, but it's obviously been really well thought out and really well worked through for a long period of time by the team here as well, which I imagine is not very easy. So.
Thank you, Councillor Lyons. Anything further? Councillor Winner.
I'm just completely sorry, open for discussion. Sorry. Yeah. Really torn on the unit density, and I think that in some aspects they've probably bought this on themselves, some of those discretions, and making it a hard one. And in saying so, I would have. Probably want to ask a question. Can we enforce some sort of body corporate into the conditions of the permit? Because I'm worried about how these people are going to live beside each other at times, and develop their units around themselves.
I'll take that as a clarification.
And
ask if staff wish to comment.
It's been done before.
Body corporate.
I don't know a body corporate that exists in Brighton, so I'm just wondering whether this is 25.
Just enforce that there is a body corporate.
When you lodge for strata, you have to have a body. Create a body corporate. Even every two-bedroom unit will have a body corporate. Yeah. It's most of the time just not
active. Usually they're inactive.
But I'm not sure that we have any ability to enforce that.
Sometimes it does just depend on, I guess, the quality of the development of the site. I think that this is going to be largely private development, probably likely to be a bit more active, I think. Some of the ones we've seen on the water and Old Beach are definitely active. So I don't have a lot of power really to sort of enforce that.
It's something that they create themselves later on.
A part of the strata title.
It's already created, but something that they.
As soon as the strata title, the body corporate comes into effect, or a body corporate needs to come into effect, and it can either be run internally by the owners themselves or appoint an external person. But I suppose until the strata title is actually applied for and issued, you don't know what sort of tack they're going to take, whether it be a corporate entity running the body corporate or a company, or whether it's just a committee of the owners who will oversee that particular function.
See, on that point, Mayor, another clarification, I guess.
Yeah.
Is that the it's going to be staged, and that sewer pump is going to be operational from person one. Mm-hmm. Who's going to look at? Who's going to make sure that system's working?
Mm. I would say Tas Water.
Not theirs.
Mm. Well, the maintenance burden will be on the body corporate to maintain. I'm unsure as to whether or not Tas Water would have requirements placed on the body corporate for a maintenance regime similar to what we have for stormwater, but that may well be the case.
It's just something I highlighted earlier in that was a sort of a little light bulb suggesting it may be a problem.
I'll just add a few comments. I know that staff had difficulty with this particular development application and struggled with it for some time and teetered on the edge of either approval or refusal. So it wasn't an easy one. I think from my perspective, looking at it from the outside, I think the quality of what is being offered here as well as the position that it is on that particular foreshore is a real positive. I think with the quality of the development that is on offer here is brilliant, as opposed to some other developments that have taken place in the past and probably will take place in the future. So in line with that, I'll be supporting this particular decision. Is there anything further? If not, I'll put the motion. All those in favour, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Against?
Okay.
Thank you. Motion is carried. Thank you. That concludes the Planning Authority section of our meeting. Moving on to item 13, is officers' report and item 13.1. Councillor McMaster and Councillor Murtagh leaving the meeting. Item 13.1 is an update on the proposal for a Brighton Youth Community Hub. And over to Ange.
Thank you, Mayor. Councillors will recall in February this year we came across this proposal as part of the report that came to Council regarding the lease on 85 to 87 Gunn Street. Now, at that time, there were two expressions of interest and Council decided to award the lease to Your Choice Support Services for very good reasons at the time, I would say. I think now that I have become involved with meeting with the representatives of TALS and delved a little deeper into their original grant proposal, it is probably a bigger vision than we realised at the time, and is going to take a lot longer than we probably anticipated to develop exactly what this could potentially be. It's really exciting, I think. The whole idea of a co-created community-based youth hub that brings together a range of services that focus on youth, keeping in mind here too that TALS would not just be offering services to Aboriginal youth, it would be for everyone, and they're very adamant about that. One thing that that really stood out for me, having now met with them, is that their vision is that this would be created by all of the services that have an interest in the youth hub. It's not just them creating it. So their vision is it would be an advisory committee or a steering committee, and whoever is settled on as part of that steering committee, they all have equal say in how this comes together, with council kind of facilitating that whole process. So at the time we said there was a motion moved to offer TALS in-kind support to secure a local youth hub and to consider as part of its next budget to offer financial support to secure a local youth hub. Now, having met with representative TALS recently, that they are quite happy for us to investigate this further without needing to commit financially as such to anything at the moment. They really would just like us to form an MOU, have a look at the possibilities for site, and also gauge interest of other services in being part of that advisory or steering committee. So we're not making any commitment other than to just investigate further at this stage with the TALS guys. So that's the crux of it. I think there's some fairly compelling reasons why we would be looking at this time at a youth hub in Bridgewater. We've all seen what's happened with our with the Big Bang Youth Night and the talk, and we've started to get a real feel of how important this really is to have something that is servicing that 12 to 25 year age group. We haven't really had a lot of investment at all in that age group. We don't have youth workers in the area. We don't have a lot of dedicated services to youth at all. We really are lacking when it comes to youth, and for the area that we are, that's something we really need to address, and I think our role is to take on that leadership role there and help to facilitate something that is very much what they're calling place-based. So instead of us waiting for services to come and say, oh, we can do this and we can do that. It's about us getting people together and working out something that will work for this area, not bringing in something that's worked somewhere else. Yeah, that's right. So that's really the crux of what this is about.
Thank you, Ange. Councillors, any questions of Ange? If not, we have a recommendation, which is made up of three parts, an MOU, conduct an initial analysis and possible sites and locations, and conduct initial discretion.
I'm happy to move. Can I ask one question, Mayor? On page 50.4, at the end of the paragraph says, and no young person will be excluded. What does that mean? I don't know what it means, but under what conditions would you accept everybody? Is this behavioural stuff, or is an exclusion on race?
That is a reference to the fact that there are some Aboriginal services that are only dedicated to Tasmania. So that would not be the case with
you. That's not behavioural exclusion requirements here. No.
I'm happy to move it.
The recommendation has been moved by Councillor Gedd, seconded by Councillor Curran. Is there any comments or debate?
Nope.
Yeah, look, can I just... Do you want to go first, please?
The reason I'm moving, I think it's a very good move to get all the youth together and with the other groups as well. So it's something we probably should have looked at probably years ago. I know we looked at the skate park and bike things and things like that, and we did have surveys out there what the youth wanted in the area, so, and that's aligned with what you've been doing as well, so it's actually brought it to the fore. So I can see this is going to be a very good future for the young ones, the youth of the area, and actually further out as well, so we've probably even spread across the whole municipality. So I reckon it's going to be really tops, and maybe in the future we can even get federal grants and extra things as well, and probably a fit for house as well for some of them, like food up as well.
Thanks, Councillor Curran.
Yeah, look, I just wanted to say this is a really great opportunity to do something. We know there are massive issues out there with youth in our community, and not just our community, lots of community, and I think it comes from lack of support services for our youth. So I'm 100% behind this, and I think if we can find somewhere for them to call home, I know that's going to be hard. There just isn't anywhere, but maybe some little pocket of somewhere will pop up. But yeah, I'm 100% behind it.
Thanks, Councillor Curran. Anything further?
Long time coming, long time needed.
Yeah.
Without further ado, I'll put the motion. All those in favour, please say aye.
Aye.
Against? Carried. Thank you. We call Councillor Lewis. As I indicated earlier, we'll move on to item 13.3, which is a review of the small community grant application for Jordan River Services Incorporated. Who'd like to speak about that one, Ange?
Yep.
Over to you.
So, as councils will recall, with the small community grants, we had an application from Jordan River Service that was around the Edmund Rice camps, and it was agreed in that application that if someone wanted to go on one of those camps, that they could come to us and we would then assess it as such. Hidden within, we feel perhaps councillors didn't see, there was another component to that application that we're not sure was addressed. So we just wanted to be fair, bring that back to council to make sure that it was looked at as the... It's the school holiday activities that were in there, and you can see they were listed there in the report that are fairly, set out fairly clearly there. And so we just wanted to give you the opportunity to review that, because it was titled Edmund Rice Camps, but there was this component hidden in there. And we didn't really discover that until we rang Jordan River Services, who asked us then about that component of it. So that's really why that's back.
Thanks, Thanks, Ange. Any questions?
Willem. I could, thanks. Ange, how many kids are we talking about for the holiday program?
So there's different amounts, but they're talking about 10 people on some of those excursions. They're 10 young people, I think, is what they've highlighted for some of those. Not sure about some of the others. The Zudu's 10. The others are fairly open, I think, in terms of numbers. But yeah.
To respond to you there, Michael, with the sorry, Councillor Wheeler, Combi Crew Disco and the movie afternoon, it really depends on which area of the organisation building that they're using to how many people they can accommodate. It's quite a few when they do get them in there.
Councillors, we have a recommendation from our staff that we do approve that, but I'm in your hands in regards to that matter.
Happy to move.
Thank you, Councillor Rowan. Yeah. Moved by Councillor Rowan, second by Councillor Murtagh, that Council approve Tutler Matter 1959 for the community grants from the community grants budget to go to Jordan River Services. Is there any discussion or debate?
No, agree.
Not, I'll put the motion. All those in favour, please say aye.
Aye.
Against? Carried. Thank you. Thank you. Come on. Item 13.2 is the Tasmania Community Landcare Conference, a ticket bursary program. We'll hand over to Angela again.
Thank you, Mayor. So this one, we were approached by Landcare Tasmania to ask us whether we were interested in offering this bursary. We have put it to council because we have two active groups at the moment that are registered with Landcare, so they have to be registered groups to be eligible for the bursary. And so we have suggested that what happens is we then, if this was approved by council, we would approach each of those groups and ask them to nominate an individual, one from each of those groups. We would give them a simple nomination form to explain why that person is nominated to do the conference. And the other condition that we're suggesting here is that the attendee from each of those groups then does a short report back to council about what they've learnt and what they might implement or want to implement in our area in relation to their particular group. The total amount is $1,020 for the two full tickets, which covers all of the costs for that particular volunteer. This is still within our grants budget.
Thanks, Angela. Councillors, any questions of Angela on this particular?
Well, the only one I agree with adding that last little piece to report back how the conference went. I think that's brilliant because that way we're getting value for money, and we know next year we might even extend. We don't know. So, yeah.
If I could just comment, I think it's just worthy of consideration the amount of free help that you get from these groups if you're paying people to do that amount of work. It's thousands and thousands. They manage to source free trees and stuff as well, which we know add up a heap. But having seen groups that go in and have a red-hot crack without proper training, all of that is wasted because the whole lot die. So this small investment in training will bring thousands of dollars worth of values to both communities, is my personal feeling.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Council, we have a recommendation that we support the two tickets for the bursary.
Second it.
Happy to move.
Second it.
Yep. Councillor Curran and Councillor Geard, I'll put the motion. All those in favour, please say aye.
Aye.
Against? Carried. Thank you. Moving on, item 13.4 is budget for 2023-24 for the Brighton Community News. This one you, Gillian?
Yeah, this is me. So Thank you, Mr. Mayor. So this is just like an admin process that we've discovered that the Brighton Community News advertising rates haven't been updated for the past 2 years. Oops. So with the printing and distribution costs increasing, it's just for council to accept that we put these fees in our fees and charges register in line with the charges on our Brighton Community News website. So very straightforward.
Councillors, there's any questions? Not, there's a recommendation on page 58.
Yeah.
Moved by Councillor Murtagh, second by Councillor Curran. I'll put the motion. All those in favour, please say aye.
Aye.
Against? Carried. Thank you. Item 13.5 is the Brighton Fighting and Fitness Boxing Club request for a reduction in fees.
So we've received a request from Brighton Fitness and Fighting to reduce their hire fees to $55.50 for the Bob Scott Pavilion. We've received a similar request in the past to waive a debt of $1,800 and reduce their hire fees back in 2020. So the club has been the recipient of several community grants programs, and they've actually used that money to update their shed. So it's fitted out for a boxing or fitness club. They've supplied their financials and they've operated with a small profit for this financial year, and they are offering fitness and fighting classes to the predominantly underprivileged and disadvantaged youth. So about 11 to 17 each week get away with free classes. It's recommended to discount the fees to $55.50 per week. I just think it's important that youth are engaged, and if they don't have reduced hire fees, the club could fold, and what will these youth do then? They'd just be finding alternative places to hang out, which is not that good.
Thank you, Gillian. My understanding, just a quick question, my understanding is there's no paid employees for this particular
organisation. No, they're all volunteers.
It's all voluntary.
Yes.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
Councillors?
Moved.
Second.
I've always struggled personally with the boxing thing. I take kids and let's teach them to use their hands as weapons. So this is actually what I did a bit of research into myself to go, okay, well, you know, I don't understand a lot of the value, but it's just always something that's not sat that well with me. But it was really interesting in my research that it was actually a lot more of it was around teaching self-control. It was around having really strong mentors that actually guided them. So in many cases, people that were more likely to turn to those methods were learning not to as part of the process. So I think it's a lot more than what it sort of looks at times is, you know, teaching that they are weapons at the end of the day and can be used. But also, I think the thing that's not considered sometimes here is the support for parents and guardians of some of these people that then get to come together and maybe find some support in each other as well. So it's a pretty small fee to pay for, as well as a bit of fitness on top of that as well. I should probably turn up there myself for a few little rumbles, see how we go. I'm not looking at you, Lee. We have Jim over there now. I was next to David on the treadmill, though. That was embarrassing. Anyway, I think for my person, I think the value of any of these things that are sports clubs and bringing things together, particularly youths, need to be absolutely highlighted.
I'd just like to comment as well. Like, I'm not into physical stuff. I'm probably a quicker runner, I reckon. But I've been there quite a few times, and actually I've been really impressed the way it's run. And you're quite right. Is they get people, and actually they actually go and pick people up and bring them there. So even though they're volunteers, they actually go out of their way to bring people up there and train them and get them right. So their anger management is the first thing they actually do before they do, and just that they do the physical weightlifting before they even get in the boxing ring, which I thought was really good. So they get the mental thing done first, then the physical thing after. And they've really been a self-help organisation up there as well, from how they fitted out going back years ago when it was virtually bit of concrete on the floor and just a ring and maybe one punching bag, and that was it to what they've got now. I really take the hats off to them.
Mm.
Thank you. That recommendation has been moved by Councillor Owen and second by Councillor Murtagh. If there's no debate, I'll put the motion. All those in favour, please say aye.
Aye.
Against? Carried. Thank you. Item 13.7 is naming of roads and streets at 155 Lambert Circle and 105 Fisher Drive in Birdsman's Cove. Jo, hand over to you.
Okay. As noted in the report, the Place Names Act now requires street names to be put to council for consideration. We have a couple of centre care developments that require naming so that they can get the power on to the sites. So we've done a bit of research. It's taken a while to get some names to be submitted, and it's essentially been left up to the staff. So we've chosen four names which are all endemic flora to the state, and they're outlined there and shown on the map in the attachments. So putting them to you for approval.
Any questions?
Well, like nothing, I commend the staff on the naming. I thought that was brilliant when I read that report. I thought that was clearly naming something in that respect. So, congratulations.
It is an important issue, addressing lots and naming the streets, because getting your services on is near impossible. And finishing developments is very hard, and TAS Networks, TAS Water, they don't want to know you unless you've got an address. So yeah, it'd be good if council has a procedure, and you probably already have, but expedites that through a process, probably even before titles are issued.
Can I make a comment there?
Yeah.
So we are actually going to work on creating a schedule, and we'll put a list to you for endorsement, and we can actually register that with Place Names, and we'll hold those names for up to 3 years, I think it is. And we've been talking with developers at Tivoli Green, so they've got some themes that they want to use for their road names, and we'll just have to work on that. But we have been a bit behind the ball game because Helen used to just manage all of this, so we're doing a fair bit of catching up on what's required, what the Act requires. And these are just put to you now so that we can actually help those developments get moving.
Thanks, Jo. The recommendation's been moved by Councillor Curran, seconded by Councillor Sands. Is there any debate, Barbara?
I thought Gear Drive and Owen Mews had a nice ring to it, but I guess we'll go with both of those.
I've already got a street already.
Yeah, I'll tell you that. Oh, you did too. No, I thought it was really good as well.
You could call it Pedra. Right?
Mm. I love it was endemic too. I thought that was really good. Nice touch.
Thank you. Moved by Councillor Curran, seconded by Councillor Irons. I'll put that motion. All those in favour, please say aye.
Aye.
Against? Carried. Thank you. Item 13.8 is the Tasmanian Housing Strategy Exposure Draft Report.
That's me too.
Hand over to Jo.
Yep. So this report is setting out, we're seeking your endorsement for the draft response to the housing strategy. Just in general terms, the response is consistent with the responses we've been putting forward most recently, talking about making sure that all the strategies are consistent with the SPPs, so that everything's universal. Ongoing revision of Strelis, which we know has been an issue, and ensuring that is reviewed, once it is reviewed, then reviewed regularly. Infrastructure contribution frameworks, of course, are a big thing that need to be considered, and that helps with the first mover problems that we're having with land banking and trying to get land to market. And also ensuring that you're getting good planning outcomes, so that if we're going to build a whole heap of houses, we need to make sure the social infrastructure is there to support those houses as well. So, and also, you know, things like supporting innovation and trying to achieve all of that at the same time. So, so seeking your endorsement on the draft submission.
Councillors, any comments?
The only comment I'll make is to build houses fast. I don't know how they can do that with the way the things are at the moment and into the future with lack of tradesmen and everything else, so that's going to be a big problem. And the only other aspect there was that somewhere down the street you're going to have to look at multi-storey buildings for people that's homeless and things like that, just not to put them in. Gone's the day when everyone's going to have a house. You're not going to be able to do it in the future. You can see that from other countries when we go there, so we're going to be in the same boat in the future. But at the time, for the moment, yes, it's fine. Yeah, I've got no problems.
I'd just like to comment, Joe, thank you for putting in the infrastructure part in regards to the inclusion of that. That certainly seems to be a problem that is now coming to the fore, particularly in our municipality. Moving forward, that we are getting an influx of new builds, but without the backup for infrastructure, transport, local shops, etc., etc. So I think it's an important inclusion in your response. So thank you for that. Councillor Wheeler?
Just another question or sort of statement. I did go to the Homes Tasmania application information night. Barbara was there as well, and I found it ironic that that they put their application in June to potentially avoid any infrastructure charges that might occur in July, and here we are talking about infrastructure. But
unfortunately,
that's a statement.
Now the legislation's been written. So,
yeah,
but I agree.
Yeah, I agree too.
And we're also meeting with Home Tasmania next week. So
yeah, okay.
Talk about what their role is in providing things like infrastructure, where is exact right.
Okay, yeah. Well, that's good.
Thank you.
No.
Any further?
No,
we have a recommendation that we endorse that submission. Someone prepared to move? Moved by Councillor Ryan, seconded by Councillor Whelan. Is there any debate? If not, I'll put the motion. All those in favour, please say aye.
Aye.
Against? Carried. Thank you. Item 13.9 is landmark entrance signs to the Brighton Hub. Joe, again.
You see from the report that previously council allocated funds in the 21-22 budget to construct two landmark signs. Those landmark signs were as a result of a recommendation in the brand and place strategy that was undertaken for the industrial hub. Since the funds were allocated, the time taken for planning scheme amendment and also increasing costs for construction. Cal's probably more across those, but those costs have increased significantly, so essentially we don't have enough money to purchase two signs, so our proposal is to reduce and only install one sign and use the balance funding for landscaping, etc., around that sign. So we're seeking your approval to reduce signage from 2 to 1.
Thank you. Councillors, questions? Well, we have a recommendation as per Joe's information then. A
couple of shipping containers look good. Yeah, I'll move.
Thank you. Councillor Owen, seconded by Councillor Gere. Any debate? I'll put the motion. All those in favour, please say aye.
Aye.
Against? Carry. Thank you. Item 13.10 is the Ted Jeffries Memorial Park Master Plan 2021-30-35.
I'll let Cal say this one.
No worries, we're just deciding who was going to.
Boxing ring.
So, this report is relatively straightforward. It's just a bit of an update on where the project's at. With the Ted Jeffries Memorial Works up at Seymour Street, there have been a few developments since the master plan was presented to Council a couple of years ago. So, David Cundall, in working with the user groups, including the soccer, the soccer club up there, they've had some revisions basically to arrange things so that we're not removing infrastructure that we don't need to, like keeping the skate park in place, just at it's unnecessary cost, and there's opportunities for us to reuse some of the infrastructure that's out there, and then also rearranging the soccer fields so that they kind of better fit with the club's current needs, but we still allow for the future expansion of the club. You can see on page
281 and 282, I think, the attachments. There's a bit of an update on the full project plan and what the intention is over the next 6 months, as well as what's been covered so far and what's in progress. So you can see the off-lead dog park's currently under construction. We're in the design and tender phase for the new club rooms and the detailed design phase for the car park and Seymour Street upgrade works that are associated with all the curb and channels going in there. So that's all from me.
Thank you. Have we got the deed as yet, Callum?
Everything's been applied for. We haven't got a signed deed yet, no. But we have had assurance from the federal department that the restrictions that we're used to dealing with, which would limit our spending to nil prior to having a signed deed in place, don't apply in this instance, and we do have the opportunity to... everything that's been spent to date can be incorporated into the deed once received.
Excellent. Thus, we've started the...
Correctly,
yep. Park.
Yep.
Excellent. No, thank you. That's excellent.
That's me.
Councillors, any questions?
No, we're throwing the knife and say it's going to satisfy quite a few people.
Well, Chris, the orientation of the fields, playing fields.
Yes, yep.
Generally 15 degrees east of north is desirable. One ground adheres to that rule of thumb, but the others don't. How do we deal with that?
There are obviously site constraints. Some of the things that we're working around is that there was a endangered fauna species, endangered flora species on the site that we've also had to work around. So there are obviously site constraints. We're working with Soccer Taz and as well as the club and coming to basically a compromise that everyone's happy with. So, yeah, they're all on board. It might not be in the strictest of senses to the specification, but all of the relevant clubs and bodies are involved in the decision making. So,
thank you. Thank you. Councillor Gibb.
Yeah, only thing I can say, Mr. Mayor, look, quite a few people have been asking about, so it's really good to see that we're coming there now and that we're finally got a rough, well, reasonable plan for the future as well, for expansion as well. So, really good. So it's going to be an asset for not only the township of Brighton but for the whole municipality and actually, to be honest, the region, the whole region in our area.
Thank you. Council, is there anything further? Can I just have a recommendation?
Sorry, I was just going to say this is really good. I spoke to the representative from the Brighton Storm Soccer Club yesterday and we went through it and she's very happy.
Yeah, great.
And soccer's just growing and growing and growing. So, especially with girls. So I think this is great. Can we get on to it and do it?
Yeah, no, that's the plan.
Thank you. The recommendation is that the project update on the Ted Jeffries Memorial Park Master Plan 2023-35 be received.
So move.
Ready to move. Councillor Gear, Councillor Curran. Is there any debate? I'll put the motion. All those in favour, please say aye.
Aye.
Against? Carried. Thank you. Item 13.11 is representatives on the Community Development Committee. I don't think there's any need to hand over to David for an explanation on that. Councillor Whelan wishes to be a member of that particular committee. Someone prepared to move? Moved by Councillor Murtagh, second by Councillor Curran. I put that motion. All those in favour, please say aye.
Aye.
Against? Carried. Thank you. That was easy, Michael.
Yes.
No debate at all. Item 14 is questions on notice, and there are no questions on notice for the July meeting. And that concludes the open session of our meeting this evening.